to Balashika. No. Do you think there's nothing there? Do you think we're the only ones to? That I'm wrong to go trudging off up there, that I'm a useless idiot? That I'll have freaks for children? And it will all be for nothing? I just don't want you to die. For some reason, just at this moment, I really don't want that. And I'm not planning to, but I'll go there anyway. I'll just get my strength back and be on my way. Hug me.
Deeper, deeper. Stop acting like you'd never had your cherry popped.
Oh, that hurts.
Shut your gob, you slut. Want me to tie you up?
No, don't. Please, don't.
You all act hard to get, all you bitches. Think I'm going to believe you're some pure little girl? You're a filthy, filthy bitch, and you like it, don't you, when someone does this to you? When they do this to you, when they shaft you good and hard,
that hurts.
How about that? Does that hurt too? Take that and that, you bastard. If you... Who are you? Who the hell are you, eh? What the fuck are you? You scumbag. Scumbag, filthy bastard, I'll slaughter you. Help! Mother! Guards! Help! Mother!
You can't stay tonight. He'll come this evening.
Who's he?
This master? That doesn't matter.
That scar there on your stomach. The cigarette burn, did he do that?
No, not him.
You're lying, right? Look, I've got burns too, here. They're from that night. That night when the two of us... when we were introduced. That man who found me in the corridor. I was crawling along, drunk. He picked me up and brought me to you. He was the one who gave you to me. Is he your master?
That's none of your business.
Did he burn you with a cigarette?
Why do you put up with things like that?
And what did he burn me for? They're on my arm. That's my order tattoo, it was.
I know what was there, Artyom. I read it. I remember that night.
Why did he burn it out, your master? Why did he torture you?
It wasn't him, Artyom. He didn't burn me. He had nothing to do with it.
Who then?
I did it. I burned myself.
You did? What for? That's insane. And who burned me? Who burned out my tattoo? You?
You did it, Artyom.
What? Why? What the hell for?
You really do need to get ready and go. If you don't remember anything, that's the best way, honestly.
I don't believe you. You're protecting him. What kind of man is he?
You can sleep at my friend Christina's place today, I've arranged it, and don't come here. I don't want you to come here. Or tomorrow, either.
Why?
You only make me feel worse. I want to burn myself again. How are you? How are you feeling?
I don't know. Alive.
I thought what you told me about Balashika, I have an admirer. He's a stalker too, freelance.
Has he been there?
No, he has a car, hidden on the surface somewhere. I can ask him to take you, to go there with you. He's making a trip today.
Is he one of your clients?
Yes, he's one of my clients.
I don't want to. I'd rather walk there.
Artyom, you won't get anywhere on foot. Look at your leg, and I asked the doctor about it. If the radiation sickness isn't treated, you might have only 3 weeks left. But how can you get it treated here? Where?
You just want to get me out, right? So this master of yours and I don't lock horns.
You don't believe me, do you?
You just don't know what to do with me. Any place will do just as long as I'm not here this evening when your master comes.
The trip's today, Artyom. Will you go?
Yes, I'll go.
I don't want anything to happen to you.
I don't believe you.
Right then. Bend down.
What for?
You can wear it for the time being, so you'll have something to hold on to. When you come back, I'll take it back.
Hi, Sashun. I'm a bit tired today, so can we just have some tea and get some sleep, eh? Let's go into my office.
All right. Those cretins, would you believe it? They blew up the passage to Kuznetsky Most, and all Pushkin collapsed. They've got nowhere left to go now, and the Reds don't want to listen to any talk. A total damn mess. I'm exhausted. They foul everything up, and they have to sort it out.
I understand.
What are you doing here, eh? Eavesdropping, are you? Who are you?
I... He's with me. He came for a consultation, so to speak. He's got the consulting hours confused. I'll take him away. I'll take him away.
I got confused. Sorry, wrong time, wrong place. Is he tanked up, or what?
Of course he is. Totally shit-wasted, can't you see? Come on, let's go, you great hero.
Who's there? What is it?
It's nothing, Alexei Felixovich. A false alarm.
False alarm.
Chapter 15. Enthusiast's Highway. They went up from Trubnaya Station. There turned out to be an exit there as well as an entrance. And you could get in there without any ID documents. You just had to know who to talk to, who to talk in front of, and what words to use.
You don't know how to deal with people, you fool,
Lyocha told Artyom. But Lyocha knew how, and he was an impeccable first apostle.
I'll go with you,
he said rather indefinitely.
Firstly, I didn't see anything so almighty scary up on that surface of yours. Secondly, a stalker's earnings are as good as anyone's, and it might even pay better. And thirdly, my balls are swelling up anyway. One runcheon more or less isn't going to make much difference. Let's go. Whatever we find, a third of it's mine.
You're a greenhorn,
objected the stalker who had agreed to take Artyom to Balashika.
You owe me for the lesson and for the suit, so whatever you find, half of it will be mine, and you get damn all out of what I find, all right?
Lyocha thought for a moment.
Well, that's something at least, he sighed. Just make the lesson a good one.
The stalker was called Savelli. Savelli's wrinkles didn't run like normal people's did, but any which way, vertically across his forehead and down from his mouth and crisscross around his eyes, and where his eyebrows should be. The folds from Savelli's nose to the corners of his mouth had been carved with a penknife, and just below his forehead, a deep notch had been carved in with a fret saw so that his nose seemed to hang there all on its own. His hair all seemed to be in the right place, but it was sparse, and his cranium, which was also wrinkly, could be seen through it quite clearly. And Savelli's fangs were forged out of steel. Not all of them, though. Some were simply missing. He was getting on for 50 years old, so he must be a good stalker. It was painful for Artyom to walk with the acute shooting pain from his knee, and at every step his lacerated back felt agonizing, as if the skin was about to burst and roll up into a tight tube, leaving the brown, baked flesh exposed. They crossed the boulevards, steering clear of the creeping routes, and walked past the ruined shopping center beside the circus. The circus was closed. The shopping center had been devoured by some kind of malevolent mold. They walked round it and went down into the car park. Savelli's car was standing there.
As if I'd just driven in to take a stroll round the shops,
the stalker confided to them in a nasal voice.
A good feeling.
Artyom didn't like this. He didn't like the random wrinkles either, or the steel teeth, or the squinty eyes, or the fact that this man came to see Sasha whenever he wanted and used those eyes and teeth on her. He didn't want to picture that to himself, but he couldn't help it. And the worst thing was that Savelli only came up to Artyom's shoulder. How could she possibly do it with someone like that?
Are you shagging Sasha too?
Savelli asked him straight out.
Glad to meet you. A fine girl. Although she could be my daughter, but I don't have a daughter, so my conscience isn't bothered by that.
You go to hell,
Artyom told him for saying that. He'd been going to do it anyway.
I get it,
the stalker said with a wink and didn't take offense.
I'd fall for her too if I was a bit younger. But when I was a bit younger, I had different Sashkas.
and Artyom didn't like that at all. Savili's car was a station wagon. Under its cover it was silvery, pampered, and well-oiled. Its windows gleamed like mirrors, and the whisker of the radio aerial was about 1.5 meters long. And, in particular, the driving wheel was on the right. Artyom took a look at himself in a black glass. The helmet on his head, the one Savili had given him, was idiotic, but the gun was good, with a silencer. The gun was more important. Everything else in the underground car park had rotted away or been ransacked. Can't be much fun for this car of his here, thought Artyom, the only one still alive. Like going to a graveyard to visit your relatives. The car started immediately. My little Japanese girl, the stalker explained with a hint of pride. I visit her every time I come up on top. Of course there aren't many weirdos wandering about now, but I still worry anyway. They crept up out of that crypt and drove out onto the garden ring road. To Balashika, you say?
Yes, Balashika.
Where exactly? It's quite a big place, Balashika. Pretty much a town.
We'll find it when we get there.
You're a funny guy, said Savelli. They went to the right along the garden ring. They couldn't hurry, the corridor through the rusty junk wasn't very wide, and it was twisty. Sometimes they stuck their nose into a track, but it was a dead end. They had to reverse out. The pavements were all cluttered with crashed cars, too. When people had tried to escape from Moscow, they'd raced along the pavements as well, and straight over other people. But was there even anywhere to run to, anyway?
And what's there?
They'd set off early in the morning, so they would have the dim light of the day for the expedition. The sky was completely smeared over with clouds that didn't let the 10-ruble sun Artyom had seen the last time shine through. The night had been black. The dawn was grey, and the morning was completely colourless. He drank all evening just to avoid thinking about the fact that someone else was Sasha's master. There were only 2 hours of night left, and he didn't even wake up with a hangover but still drank. He felt sick. Maybe that was the homebrew, but obviously it was really the sickness. There weren't any crows in the city, or dogs, or rats. The buildings stood there, parched and withered. Only the wind moved. Everything else had stiffened and frozen ages ago. The radiation meter ticked away as if it was counting down, especially for Artyom. Lyocha was as quiet as if he'd swallowed his tongue. Deadness surrounded them. There is an outpost there. The Red Line is building a colony on the surface.
The Red Line? A colony? What for?
They're going to settle the surface, Artyom said in desperation.
In Balashika? Balashika isn't exactly very far away. Just outside the orbital ring road. Take a look at the meter. Who can live there?
People.
Just where did you get this from, kid?
Someone told me. Someone reliable. He said men have been sent there from Rokossovsky Boulevard station to build an outpost. Convicts. They've got a prison camp at Rokossovsky, and the boulevard is right beside Balashika, within walking distance. It all fits, if you think about it.
But why in Balashika? What's that place got? Savelli persisted. Some kind of bunkers? A military base?
A radio communication center. Maybe. Apparently. So, thinking logically, they must communicate with someone, if it's a radio center. Artyom turned his head and looked at Savelli. How would he react? So I think there are survivors somewhere else. An outpost. While he was lying there, recuperating on the sofa bed in Sasha's little room, he'd had time for imagining. So it was probably a fortress with walls a few meters high and machine gun towers to keep enemies away. But inside it was like one of those little glass globes with toy snow, a cozy little paradise. But what exactly was there? People, of course, without gas masks, breathing the air, children playing, all well fed, some kind of domesticated animals, ducks maybe. Orange ones, and mushrooms, obviously great huge ones, and the whole inner courtyard was covered in luscious greenery, rustling in the wind and shimmering. Basically, they had a life, not just an existence. Savelli's face was covered with pale green rubber instead of skin. The rubber didn't wrinkle up or stretch at what Artyom said. Savelli had round glass lenses instead of eyes, and the lenses could only bulge, they couldn't narrow. Did he think this was funny? Or was he angry that he'd signed on for this imbecilic tomfoolery? Was he wondering why he was taking the risk? If he only knew who told Artyom about Balashika and what the other people there at the time had said. Savelli waited for a moment, then reached out his hand, found a button, and switched on the radio. He ran through the FM wavelengths and switched to AM, and then to ultra short waves. Everywhere the abandoned airwaves howled faintly, like the wind in naked branches. The sterile earth spun in its dusting of insect powder, completely empty, in airless space, with man only perched on it at one spot, like a solitary louse that hadn't been killed yet. Squatting there, motionless and sleepy, under the bell jar of the heavens, with nowhere to go, and death won't come.
"It would be good if there were survivors somewhere," Savelli answered and looked back at Artyom. "Maybe there really are."
Artyom couldn't believe he was being honest when he said that.
"I am not from Moscow," the stalker continued. "I come from near Ekaterinburg. I came here to study after the army, to be a cameraman. I wanted to shoot a film about the war. What a cretin. I thought I could come up with a film about tanks and my time in the army and conquer the capital. I left everyone behind there, my mother and father, my younger sister, and my granddad and granny were still alive. My mother hinted that I could get settled in Moscow and then Varka could come up here too, and maybe, she said, in our old age, we'll move to somewhere outside Moscow, closer to you. Or you can come back to us, leave the grandchildren with us for the summer to go mushrooming and berry picking. I finished my studies, but the work went nowhere. And every year I told them, yes, yes, right away, any moment now. I couldn't sink any roots into this Moscow, and that was it. I lived in rented apartments all the time, just one room, always in the outskirts. I was ashamed to bring women to photo shoots, let alone put up my own sister. And then if my little sister was there, what could I do about women? I reckoned I'd fallen in love, but I didn't have the money to get married. To get to work, I always took the minibuses and the metro and the taxis, never had enough money for a car. I saved up and saved up, and then the ruble went down the drain. Life was lousy. That's what I thought then. But now I think different."
"Have you ever tried listening for radio signals?" Artyom asked.
"I've tried all right," Savelli responded. "Nothing there. But basically I couldn't give a shit for the radio. I have the car all fitted out and fueled up because the way I think is this. Why not just abandon the whole fucking shooting match? Why not just walk out of the metro one morning and get into the car, put on a Prodigy disc and zoom out of this fucking Moscow of yours and go east for as far as I can keep going? I've already swapped some stuff for oil from the chemists and pickled plenty of mushrooms. They're in the boot, by the way. And I packed them in rubber so the jars wouldn't smash against the machine gun. Everything's ready. It's been that way for more than 2 years.
Why don't you go?
Because. Because I'm a human being, craven and cowardly. It's easy to decide. Going through with it is harder.
I can see that.
But every couple of nights I see our dacha. The vegetable patch, the well, the raspberries and the bushes, my father scattering manure on the dug-over soil and shouting, come and help me, and I keep dodging him. And my mother calling me to drink goat's milk. Can you see that too?
I can see it. Sleepy Leocha piped up from the back seat. Not all of it, but some of it.
Well then, said Savelli, I wouldn't mind if they were all alive. Or someone at least.
At least the old man who lived opposite us and used to pull my ears for firing my catapult at his chickens.
They drove past the Leningrad railway station, and the Kazan railway station, and the Kursk railway station. From all of them the rusty tracks ran off into bleak desolation. Artyom had been here when he was serving under Miller. He'd walked out onto the tracks and watched the two rails come together at a single point and wondered what was out there at the other side of the world. A strange thing, a railway. Like the metro, but with no walls.
"But I've heard," he said, "that there's a tunnel somewhere from Metro 2 that goes to the Urals, to the government bunkers, and that's where all the government leaders are, guzzling tin stuff and waiting for the radiation level to drop."
"They're guzzling each other," Savelli retorted. "You don't know those people. You never watched the television."
Artyom didn't know those people. But he knew others. He remembered the unopened envelope that must be lying somewhere in Dietmar's breast pocket, riddled with bullet holes. Miller and that Felixovich in his phone had failed to stop the war.
"Felixovich," said Artyom, sobering up.
"Alexei Felixovich. Besalov?"
"Sleep it off," Savelli advised him. "Your friend back there has switched off. Why don't you do the same? It'll take us a while to get to Balashika at this rate."
But Artyom couldn't. The tension was making him feel dizzy.
"Stop,"
he told Savelli. "I feel sick." Savelli stopped, and Artyom got out to spill his guts. It felt better without the gas mask, but the radiation tasted bitter on his tongue. That was bad. And the desolation all around was so bad that Artyom couldn't think any more about who was Sasha's master and who was Miller's. A different thought started buzzing in his head instead. "What a stupid idiot you are. How could you let yourself be deceived by that half-alive corpse in the tunnel? How could you have believed his dying ravings? There isn't anything there. Not in Balashika, or in Mitishki, or in Korolyov, or in Odinstovo. Nowhere. There never had been."
"Copped a dose, did you?" Savelli droned. "Or is it the hangover?"
"Let's get going." Artyom slammed the door. From the garden ring they trundled down to the embankment of a swampy little river with heavy yellow vapor slowly rising from it. Then through 1,000 empty buildings again, past a strange tiny little red church with dull little crosses crushed in between 2 squat little houses. His hand rose up to his neck of its own accord, felt for the talisman through the rubber suit and stroked it, without any help from his head or his conscious mind. They came out onto a straight, wide road, very wide and straight, like the red line itself, no bends and no sharp corners, 3 lanes in one direction, 3 lanes in the other, and tram lines as well. And it was packed solid, but only in one direction, to the east, out of the poisonous city. Packed solid with cars that had stalled or collided. The veins of Moscow had choked up.
"Enthusiasts Highway,"
Artyom read on a blue sign. The cars had turned into metal containers, into tins. The petrol had been drained out of all of them a long time ago, but nobody had taken the people out of their tins. Where could you put them anyway? The cars had stopped so tightly packed together that the doors couldn't be opened, so their owners were still there inside them, still travelling east to this very day. Black and withered, long ago gnawed right down to the bones. Some had nestled their faces into the driving wheels, some had lain down on the back seat, some were lulling a child to sleep. It was good that they hadn't died of hunger, but from the radiation, or perhaps from the poisonous gases. They hadn't had to wait long, and hadn't really understood anything. Where there could have been 8 rows, 12 had squeezed in. 1 car every 4 meters. On average, let's say 3 people in a car, although many of them were packed. How many did that make? How long, Artyom wondered, was the highway? Where did it go to? Where did it end? The meter started crackling loudly. Savelli squirmed anxiously in his chair, which had some kind of white pelt thrown over it to make it cozier. They had to scramble along the margin of the road, and there was barely enough space.
"Right then, enthusiasts," he asked Artyom. "Balashika, is it?"
"Graven and cowardly," Artyom replied.
He stopped looking at the passengers hurrying along in their frozen jeeps and sedans. He was bored with them. He closed his eyes. A rusty taste lingered miserably in his mouth. Savelli and he were going nowhere. Everyone was right. Artyom was wrong. He'd gone out of his mind. How long had Sasha said he had left? 3 weeks. And the doctor said the same. She'd stamped the sentence with her medical seal. And that seal was all the doctor had. She didn't have any medicine. And what could he do in those 3 weeks? What else should he do during that time? Go back to everyone? And ask them all for forgiveness? Anya, because Artyom hadn't wanted to live a coherent human life with her, and he hadn't been able to give her children. Miller, because Artyom had turned his only daughter's head. Sukhoi, because Artyom had never been able to call him father, not when he was 6, and not when he was 26. And instead of goodbye, he would say to him, "Dad, give me some money." If his legs would carry him a little bit farther, he could go and find Hunter, too. Have a final drink with him. Tell him, "It didn't work out for you. And it didn't work out for me. My hair's fallen out, but apart from that, I'm nothing like you. So after I'm gone, people will still be stuck in the metro forever eating worms, stumbling around in the darkness, telling tall stories, trading in pig shit, and fighting to the last breath. I won't open their cell door for them. I won't set them free. I won't teach them not to go blind in the sun." Then take the cartridges that Sukhoi had tipped into his pocket. Go to Tsvetnoy Boulevard, give them all to Sasha, and embrace her gently. Snuggle up against her with their foreheads and noses touching, for this money, and do nothing. Just simply lie there and look into her eyes from close up. Oh, and ask Homer to take her out of that dive when Artyom kicked the bucket. Well, it was a plan. Didn't it seem like the Japanese girl had started moving a bit faster?
"Look!"
Artyom opened his narrowed eyes. A path had opened up. The cars had been pushed off it, crumpled up and squeezed into other rows. As if an immense bulldozer had moved along, clearing them off to the side with its metal blade. An asphalt channel had been cleared through the solid surface of rust all the way to the horizon.
"There!" said Artyom. "There! Who do you think did that?"
His heart started trembling and swaying on thin rubber straps in his hollow chest. His body broke into a sweat under the impermeable protective suit. The excitement brought that sour spittle back into his mouth, but Artyom checked it and held it back. He didn't want to stop and lose even a single second. So they had found some kind of equipment, brought it here, and worked in secret on the surface, raking aside the endless traffic jam and clearing a road for traffic going east to Balashika. Probably no one but the Reds could have pulled off something like that in total secrecy. So that man in the tunnel hadn't deceived him. Artyom simply had to rush to the horizon, burst through it like the ribbon on a finishing line, and there it would be. The outpost. The place where in some miraculous way people lived on the surface. No, it wasn't all in vain. Not a madman, not an idiot, not a pitiful dreamer.
"Step on it,"
Artyom told Savelli. Lyoka was dozing, the radio was hissing, the wind was flattening itself against the windshield. Savelli went up to 100 kilometers an hour, and the channel narrowed from the speed, but he didn't even think about slowing down. Artyom got the feeling that under the clinging rubber the stalker was also smiling with his steel-lined mouth. The buildings came to an end, and strange forest thickets began. Tree trunks rose up on both sides of the confined road, leaned in towards each other, stretched out their branches and wove them into a canopy, trying either to embrace or to strangle each other. But there were no leaves on them, as if they were fighting for sunlight and water, but had expended their final reserves of life on this, and whoever had carved the road through the cars had moved through this thicket too, without hesitating. Then the thickets receded, and a wide space opened up, dotted haphazardly with multi-story boxes. Enthusiast's Highway expanded by another 2 lanes at each side, and all of them, apart from the channel, were packed solid with corpses. Eventually, an immense flyover curled round into a concrete loop up ahead.
"We're crossing the orbital ring road," Savelli announced. "Balashika comes after that."
Artyom rose halfway out of his seat. "Where are you, Miracle? Straight after the ring road? Could it really be that they only had to cross the orbital highway and the radiation level would drop immediately? No, the meter only started clicking away even faster. The channel narrowed. The carrion had been cleared off it less carefully here, and it became harder to hurtle along it so fast. The orbital ring road was immensely wide, like a highway in the kingdom of the dead, and just as endless. Standing together on it in the queue for final judgment were sedans and heavy trucks, plain little Russian boxes and stately foreign limousines. Some of the trailer trucks had their cabins tipped forward as if their heads had been half severed in an execution. All of their bellies had been gutted. The metal herd stretched from horizon to horizon. The circle of the orbital ring road closed in some place unknown, like the circle of the Earth itself. But the Earth didn't end here. It carried on. It was still the same Earth. They passed a sign that said Balashika. There was nothing outside the orbital ring road that was different from what was inside. The buildings stood more sparsely. Instead of 5-story Khrushchev blocks, factory ruins crept up to the road. What else was there here? Shattered kiosks at overturned bus stop shelters, buses like gas chambers with a panoramic view. The wind, blowing runcheons in your face, flying from east to west. The day was beginning and there was no one to see it. Artyom could have completely lost his faith and renounced the church. Only one thing stopped him. The channel carried on farther. Where to?
"Well, where is it?" Savelli asked. "Which way, Susanin?"
"Which way?"
Artyom asked the man who was coughing in the tunnel. Why had he believed him? Sasha had told him, "Don't believe anyone." But how could I not believe? What would I hold on to then, Sash?
"There! What's that over there?"
Leocha started squirming about behind him.
"Where? Over there! What's that there on the left? It's moving! And there's more than one!"
They were moving. Turning. It was standing by the road, in an open spot. A tower that wasn't a tower, a windmill that wasn't a windmill. Made of metal rails, probably a cross-welded structure about 4 stories high, broader at the bottom, narrower at the top, with a huge 3-bladed propeller grafted onto its head. In its rush, the east wind lost its way and fell into the trap, and it spun the blades to free itself.
"And over there, look, and there too!"
The wind towers were strung out one after another along the side of the road. The others were hidden behind the first. 1, 2, 3, 4, lots of them. The blades were each 3 meters long, irregular and sheathed in tin plate that was grey from the grey sky. A single glance was enough to realize that this was a handmade thing, not delivered from a factory, but assembled sometime after the end, after the war, maybe not long ago. These were what they had been building recently. Recently. Right now. Someone had built these wind towers recently, on the surface, for some purpose. The propellers spun without any coordination. It looked like an entire squadron of planes moving across an airfield to take off, maybe a squadron of those pot-bellied slow flyers with transparent wings, or as if these propellers wanted to shift the entire planet, move it to somewhere else, maybe to some inhabited planet that people could jump across onto and escape that way.
"What are they for?"
Leocha asked through his nose from the back seat. Artyom knew.
"They're like the bicycles at our station,"
he answered after a pause in a dull, spellbound voice.
"They're generators. They produce electricity.
from the wind.
And what's that for?
Are you plain stupid or what? It means that people live here. Here. What else would they need such a humongous amount of electricity for? How many of them are there? Just look, count them. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and over there as well. They could supply an entire high-rise building, or 2, or 3, 14, 15, 16, can you imagine it? And someone built all of this on the surface. What's the radiation level like?
The same, said Savelli.
Well, screw it then. It means they've managed to get round it somehow. Or they've built themselves something to keep it out. But at least they're on the surface. Why would the Reds need to be on the surface? They know something that we don't. They've got power here. We don't have as much power in the entire metro as these wind turbines produce. A whole city district can live round the clock with this power. Stop the car, pal!
Artyom shouted to Savelli.
Stop! I want to take a closer look.
Savelli killed the engine at the side of the road. Artyom jumped out, hobbled over to a wind tower, narrowed his eyes and threw his head back to look up at the sky, at the slow, creaking blades. Everything was working properly. From the wind and the creaking, these contraptions made electric current. Not one of them was standing idle. Savelli walked over with his cunning 9mm Special Forces sniper rifle at the ready and studied the windmill. He looked round and listened.
But where are your people, then? He asked Artyom. Where's your city district of live people who use this electricity to make porridge and light up the lavatory, eh?
I don't know, pal. They're hiding. This is a high road. Why would they stick their noses out here?
Artyom explained.
You mean they're watching us right now?
They could be.
Savelli raised his sniper rifle, put his eye to the sight, and swept it round in a circle.
Doesn't look like it. It's the same as in Moscow, Artyom. Empty.
There's a road, and they built wind generators. Someone built all this. Workers, engineers, electricians.
There's no one here. You're not blind, are you? They built this and went back into the metro. The meter reading's off the scale. The experiment didn't work.
They drove on, at walking speed, with the windows lowered so they wouldn't miss a single person, not even the very smallest. But there wasn't a single one. Naked trees reached their gnarled fingers up to the sky, asking for something. Behind the trees, the pylons of a power transmission line jutted up, with their wires broken. They were invisible from a distance, concealed behind the buildings. The wind got tangled in the propellers. The cumbersome rotors creaked in raucous disunity, and this collective creaking never stopped for a second. And then they could see that the wind towers came to an end up ahead, but the outpost still hadn't appeared.
Take us back. We've probably driven past it.
Savelli did that. While they were turning round, Artyom started feeling impatient and got out of the car again. He set off on foot, listening and looking.
Where are you, people? You do exist. You are here. Come on, don't be afraid. I'm friendly. Even if you're Reds, it's okay. Anyone. Do those underground colors exist up on the surface anyway? Surely they'll fade out in the sunlight.
A dog appeared at the edge of the road. It sniffed at the air and yapped lazily. Artyom hobbled towards it. It wasn't a guard dog. It had no collar, no pedigree, nothing. A whitish coat with darker patches. Dirty.
What?
Asked Savelli, overtaking him.
Do you see?
A dog.
It's not afraid of us. It's not afraid of people. And look how fat it is. It's so glossy. Domesticated, get it? Eh? There's a settlement here. Somewhere behind the trees. It's tame, and it lives in the settlement, like the mongrels we have at our station. Look how they fattened it up.
A few more wandered out slowly to join the whitish creature. If Artyom came across dogs in Moscow, he'd pick out the leader and shoot it, or he'd never get away. But they were different here. They didn't growl, they didn't spread out in a semicircle to corner you. They narrowed their eyes peaceably and just yapped gently. The radiation had taken its toll on them. One had 5 legs, and another one with a big head had a little blind head beside it. The radiation had taken a toll, but not turned them vicious. They were well fed, that was it.
Where did they come from? Look, over there, there's a path behind the trees. That's where the people are.
Artyom droned to Saveli. Saveli parked the car and took out the keys. Lyoka slammed his door as he got out. He had dark glasses with pink heart-shaped frames over his gas mask to protect him from the sun. Saveli had lent them to him. The dog sniffed at the people. Saveli shooed them off with his gun, and they ran away a few steps, lazily, not believing. Their paunches prevented them from running any faster, fattened up. Artyom raised his empty hands and set off along the path ahead of the others.
Is anybody there? Hey! Don't shoot, we were just driving by.
Could they hear him here? Artyom couldn't tell. The wind towers were creaking so desperately, and his voice could easily have gotten stuck in the creaking.
Is anybody there? Hey! Hey! Don't be afraid. We're not going to...
It was hard to breathe. The filters didn't let through as much air as Artyom needed right now, and his little windows had steamed up, turned misty. But he didn't want to pick up another dose. Doses added up, and now every breath took time off his life, and he still had to figure everything out. He still had to find comfort and hope for himself, and the whole metro. Saveli and Lyoka walked after him. The dogs trudged after them without hurrying, then went ahead, showing the way. Through the bare trees they couldn't see a building or a shed or a fence, but there was something reddish towering up about 50 steps from the road. They came out into a grassy clearing. Wagging their tails guiltily, the dogs glanced into their visitors' eyes and ran to the center. When they got there, they disappeared. Artyom walked closer, maybe there were dugouts there. It was a hole, an immense hole, dug out by an excavator. Not just a hole, but a foundation pit. The brownish color through the trees was the clay and sand taken out of it. A mountain. And there was no dugout. The pit was full of people, dumped there. All dressed any old way at all. All men. Artyom couldn't make out any more than that. The dogs had gnawed away at them. How many were there? A lot, maybe 20 just on the top, but there was obviously another layer under those, and then another and another, going deeper and deeper. And there were a lot of dogs. But there was more than enough for all of them. That was why they were so gentle and good-natured. They jumped down and carried on quietly gnawing on someone. This was the activity that Artyom had distracted them from with his own howling.
There they are. Your builders, Saveli said to his back, the builders and the engineers and the electricians, all lying there. Work hard, play hard.
Artyom looked around at him.
Why this?
He asked.
What's this for? What do you mean, what for?
Lyoka droned in his pink heart spectacles.
What's it for at the Reich? As if you never saw it. Did you think it'd be different here?
Artyom grabbed hold of his rubber trunk and tore off the mask. He needed air, so that he wouldn't lose his mind. He'd forgotten that corpses smell. Sweet and repulsive, it slammed into his brain, and he gasped and puked up bile. He ran, dragging himself away, away from the disturbed grave, and the creaking blades of the wind towers lashed and lashed at his ears. He ran out to them, standing in their neat single column. Bad work, difficult, building them here. But they were built. It must have taken a long time to get them up. Men died off one by one, and others came instead. No, they didn't come, they were brought here. Political prisoners, or any kind, to build the outpost, and almost no one ever went back. Probably Zuev's people were the only ones who escaped, but they were caught in the metro and liquidated rapidly so they wouldn't talk. That was how it was. The tin-plated wings of the wind towers swirled inexorably, glinting dully in the dull sunlight. But it wasn't a squadron of visionary airplanes. These were the blades of a meat grinder to which men had been brought from the metro to be turned into dog food and have electricity pumped out of their lives.
"What for?" Artyom asked. "What do you need so much power for?"
He spat out the sour, bitter saliva and pulled on his gas mask. And then there was a roar from behind the trees. An engine. Artyom dropped to the ground and waved to the others who were walking back. They lay flat too, so they couldn't be seen through the bare trees. A truck drove out. 6 immense wheels, barred windows, a toothed battering ram instead of a bumper, a riveted iron box with narrow loopholes and a little door instead of a back section, and everything painted grey. It drove out from a side road onto the endless enthusiasts' highway and into the clear channel at a point they had shot past in their Japanese car. It stopped and stayed there. What was it waiting for? Artyom didn't breathe. Had they heard? Were they searching? Could they see the Japanese car parked behind them? No. There was another roar, and another truck, exactly the same, trundled out onto the road, freshly painted. They lined up, belched out black smoke, hooted and set off towards Moscow. Hurtling along the open channel, fitting neatly and precisely between the heaped-up tinned goods, and soon they could no longer be seen at all on the grey asphalt.
"From over there," said Artyom. "Round the corner, what's round there?"
That was where the power line pylons jutted up above the trees. He set off along the edge of the road, his fingers spontaneously grasping the handle of his automatic. It didn't matter if Savelli and Lyoka were following him, or they were thinking it over. He had to find that place. He had to know what was there, what all those men had been spent on. He turned off Enthusiast's Highway onto a road attached to it. The sign called it Bypass Highway. And began to understand, even before he got there. They weren't power line pylons. They were radio masts. 1, 2, 3, 10, how many were there? This was the radio center. He hobbled and skipped towards them, and the pylons also crept towards him from where they had been hiding behind the trees, moving out onto the sky, towering lacework forms woven out of metal. Never mind the silly wire that Artyom used to unwind on the roof of a skyscraper. These radio aerials must be able to reach all the way to the end of the world. If they couldn't pick up a signal from Polar Dawns, then what could?
Wait!
Savelli grabbed hold of his arm.
Where are you dashing off to? In the front entrance? Through the checkpoint?
Ah, fuck that, said Artyom. The front entrance will do. These are radio masts, get it? These are aerials, a radio station. All those turbines? This is what they're for. They were built beside this, not a settlement. They're here to power the radio. Now do you see? And what does that mean? It means they're in contact with someone. Maybe those Urals of yours. The bunker at Mount Yamantau. The red bellies are talking to someone, get it? Otherwise, why guard this? You do what you like, friend. I've only got 3 weeks left anyway. I've got to know.
He tore his arm free and walked on.
Wait, you blockhead! Savelli whispered furiously. We can't just charge in. What can 3 of us do against them? At least let's sit down for a while and figure this out.
You sit. I'll reconnoiter.
He limped off under the trees. He could already see the concrete wall that the pylon stood behind. If he could just get past the wall somehow. The gates, maybe? No. Better not go near the gates. At one spot, the trees parted, close to the barrier. Artyom scrambled through the brushwood. There was barbed wire stretched out along the concrete top of the wall. Never mind, he wasn't afraid of that any longer. He jabbed his automatic at it. Would it short out and spark? No. He grabbed hold, tore his mittens, ripped his trousers, and blooded his leg again, and didn't even notice immediately. He scrambled over to the other side and dropped down with his good leg first. Slapdash. If they saw him, they'd drop him on the spot. He jumped at a good place. They hadn't seen him immediately. The grounds were covered in bushes and cluttered with brick buildings and junk. There was even an excavator curled up in the corner, sleeping, probably the one they'd used to make the dugout for the builders. A surprised Alsatian started barking and dashed out at Artyom from behind a corner, but Artyom put a quiet bullet into its face. The dog gurgled and tumbled head over heels. He crept along a building, the guardhouse at the gates. He glanced in through the window at the back. Men, dressed in rubber. Under the suits he couldn't tell if they were reds or some other color. He walked round and knocked at the door. They opened it, and he gave them a dose of lead. As you do unto us, so we do unto you. We can figure out later if I should have done that or not. We'll work that out in 3 weeks' time. There was a little television on a desk showing the gates and the wall. Winding the image back, they'd missed his jump, turned their backs, decided to rewind or just been too slow. So God had protected him then, the one who was the father. He appreciated this kind of thing. The entire Old Testament was nothing but wars and covert operations. He found the button marked Gates, then hit it, and went outside. And that was when he got the bullet he'd been asking for from the very beginning. In the shoulder. He managed to run to a wall, at least it was the right wall, facing away from the shooter, and pressed up against it. He lifted the heavy automatic with his good arm and fired at random. The wrong wall. The wrong one. Another bullet zipped off it right beside his head, and a chip of brick flew onto one of his glass lenses and the glass cracked. He ran towards the opposite wall. The shooting pain from his knee cut him down and he fell. A burst of fire started moving over the ground towards him in little fountains of dust. It had just crept up to his belly when someone started shooting from the gates. He looked with one eye. Leocha, you've drawn their fire. Thanks. Artyom got up, slipping in the dust, and another three of them came running out of the building, all in protective suits. They must have been delayed putting them on. Leocha hid behind the corner. Someone was blasting entire belts of bullets at the corner from the roof, so he couldn't come out, and those three had spotted Artyom, who was down on all fours again, who just needed two steps to get away. But he didn't have those steps. And they would have dropped him, staining the dust red, if the Japanese car hadn't come flying in through the gates and squealed as it swung round, straight through the dumbfounded men, hurling them across its hood. They started peppering it from the roof. Leocha peeped out and distracted the rooftop machine gunner again. Artyom managed to get away and reach the door. Savelli jumped out of his car and took shelter behind it. The stalker found the man on the roof in the sight of his sniper's rifle. The silencer smacked its lips twice, and the machine gun choked. One of the men who had been knocked down got up and struck Leocha a stupid blow on the chin with the butt of his gun. Then he started fiddling with his gun like a drunk so he could finish the stunned broker off. But Artyom came up, shot him in the face, and rescued his rescuer. He pushed the door and started running along a corridor. Someone came at him with a pistol, and he didn't have time to think about anything, just pulled the trigger. The man staggered back, and that was all. That was it. After that, it was empty and quiet. There was no more firing outside, either. Through the window, he could see Savelli kicking the other men he had knocked down to make sure they died for real. The building turned out to be small. A corridor and some rooms. All the doors wide open. There was the stairway to the upper floor, and it was the same picture up there. There was a control room, but Artyom had killed the man who understood something about it matter-of-factly as he passed by him. There was a whole host of buttons, and a bristling stubble of switches, and although the letters beside them were Russian, everything was labelled in some kind of gibberish, nothing but abbreviations, and there was no one to make long words out of them. Artyom sat down on a chair with wheels. He took off his one-eyed gas mask. He touched the buttons. Well, which one of you will connect me with Polar Dawns? He thought he'd found how to change the frequency. There were the headphones. In the headphones, the sea was murmuring, "Fshh, fshh." Next.
"Ah, ah."
A TB ward. A black tunnel filled with naked beast people, coughing, breathing through holes punched in them with picks. They didn't want to go anywhere, didn't want to follow him up. "There's nowhere to go up there," they said. "Everything's bombed, everything's poisoned, everything's polluted. Go up there on your own, you crazy fucking man."
"Ah,
smack." He swung his fist down into the control panel. "Work! Smack! Work, you bastard, work, you heap of shit! What is it? What were you listening to here? Who were you talking to? All those men in that pit. What are they for? All the men outside, what are they for? Work! Work! Smack!"
"Ah,
Such huge aerials. Real towers, 10 of them. They can broadcast and receive on all wavelengths. Why are you so huge and so deaf, you fucking fuckers? How do you broadcast here? How can I tell the dead world everything? How do I tell it to fuck off along with all the 7 billion dead people in it?" Savelli came in.
"Well, how are my mom and dad getting on?"
"They're not. They're not."
"Well, does someone answer at least? Or has all this been a waste of time?"
"Were they wasting their time? What did they do it for?"
Savelli didn't answer. He stirred the dead radio operator hopefully with the toe of his boot. But he'd been killed once and for all. "All right, then we need to pull out. He could have warned his friends in the trucks. Dead easy. If they come back now, it's curtains for us. Alexei's out of it, for instance."
"Is he alive?"
"Knocked out. They hit him good and hard. I put him in the car. So, come on. Collect up these guys' guns and let's go home. At least we'll get something out of this little trip."
Artyom nodded. There was nothing left to do here. There was nothing left to do anywhere at all for him. He got up off the chair with wheels. His legs wouldn't bend. His eyes were dry. The fingers that were curved at Pushkin Station, shaped to the handle of the barrow, were senselessly set together as if they were clutching the stock of an automatic rifle. The index finger was extended slightly. He went over to the radio operator and took his pistol. The radio operator didn't mind. He let Artyom have it immediately. His uniform was featureless, badgeless. "Who are you? Who are you?" He shuffled outside, took one man's automatic, then another's. There's a machine gun on the roof, he remembered. He didn't want to go back in there into this radio center. The doors of the car were open. Leocha was groaning as he came round. The airwaves were murmuring tediously in the car's music system, loud and clear, just like in the control room. He needn't have bothered to go in there. He needn't have killed men he didn't know, or taken that sin on his soul when he'd have to account for it in 3 weeks. Artyom sat on the ground and looked round obtusely. The door to the guardhouse was open. A human arm jutted out from behind it, with the fingers clutching at the asphalt. Next door was the transformer building, a yellow sign on the door with a lightning bolt, a 2-story radio center with a reticent radio operator. What was there to guard here? Why were the 2 big trucks here? Why build the wind towers? Why dig the pit with the excavator and drive men out here from the metro? To feed the dogs, to search for fugitives? The windmill turbines creaked, produced electricity, poured it into a switchgear room and charged those damn pylons. They ground souls into flour, lives into dust. They creaked so laboriously, winding Artyom's guts onto their blades. And the deaf, useless pylons jutted up over his head. He jumped up and limped fast to the transformer building with the speed of the hate that had erupted inside him. He broke off the lock with his gun butt, kicked the door. It jangled like a cracked bell, and burst in. There was the distribution board, little lamps and switches. He smashed the barrel of his gun into the board, stupidly and clumsily, little lamps crunched.
"Why, you bastards? Why do you need so much power?"
He grabbed his automatic, holding it like a stick, like a club, and swung the stock hard into the board. Splintered plastic and glass sprayed out. Dislodged fuses dropped on the floor and the light went out. He grabbed a bundle of bright-colored toy-like wires and jerked them towards him. Inside Artyom, everything was burning. Everything was twisted and compacted, and he couldn't get any relief. He wanted to destroy every last thing in here, tear everything down to the foundations, rip this pointless fucking station to pieces, send the current from the meat grinders into the ground, into the sun, out into space. Tears would have helped, but something had died in his eyes, and the tears couldn't get started.
"Hey, come here, Artyom!"
He walked out of the dark transformer building, tense and dissatisfied, still not free from that loathsome, stupid blackness. His ears were ringing. He had the rusty taste of blood in his mouth again. He saw Savelli waving his arms to him from the wide-open Japanese auto. For some reason, Savelli didn't have his gas mask on.
"What?"
Artyom shouted, trying to shout over the ringing. The stalker answered him in an inaudible whisper and beckoned.
"Eh? Come here, you blockhead!"
The wrinkles on Savelli's face had arranged themselves in a strange pattern, as if he was smiling, or maybe as if he was terrified out of his wits. His smile was insane, with a metal glint to it.
"What? Can't you hear it?"
Artyom finally hobbled as far as the car. He frowned. Now what? Something coming out of the car. From inside it. Something. He gave the stalker a wild, crazy glance, jumped into the front seat and started fumbling with trembling hands, missing the buttons. How could he turn it up?
"Is this your disc? Are you taking the piss, you bastard?"
"Cretin,"
Savelli laughed, looking in through the open window.
"Can't you tell the prodigy from Lady Gaga?"
The music flowed out of the speakers, soft and fuzzy, tangled up with hissing, and absolutely nothing like any music that Artyom had heard in the metro. Not a guitar, not a broken-down piano, not mournful hymns in deep voices about the day of victory. It was some kind of humorous antics, buffoonery, not music, but it was jaunty and sprightly, lively. He felt like dancing to this song, and it was overlaid with the familiar fsh, fsh. It was the radio, not a disc, definitely the radio. Music, not call signs, but music. Somewhere people were listening to music and playing it. They didn't say, "We've more or less managed to survive over here, but have you survived over there?" They put on music for other people to dance to.
"What is it?"
Artyom asked.
"The radio, fuck it,"
Savelli explained to him.
"But what city?" "Fuck knows which one."
Artyom pressed a button to change the wavelength. What if there was something else somewhere? It tuned in immediately. Immediately. In a single second.
"Come in, come in. This is St. Petersburg. This is St. Petersburg."
Artyom couldn't reply right now, so he rushed on. He heard jarring speech in a strange language, as if someone had stuffed his mouth with mushrooms and was trying to talk.
"English."
Savelli nudged him in the shoulder where he'd been shot.
"English, savvy? Even those bastards have survived."
"Ah, Berlin, Berlin."
"Kazan, can you hear me? Hearing you loud and clear. This is Ufa. Vladivostok to Mirny Island."
"Pshht, pshht. Greetings to the citizens of Sverdlovsk and the district. Who can hear?"
Surfeited on the sounds of the airwaves, Artyom fell back, drunk from the radio. He goggled at the stalker, and his tongue could barely even mumble.
"What is this? How did this happen? What is this?
What did you do?
I smashed the distribution board. Disconnected it, I suppose. I tried to disconnect it.
Well, look. You must have done it.
I don't understand.
Well, what else could it be?
Eh, what?
What do you think those pylons are?
Artyom tumbled out of the car, threw back his head, and gazed at the masts propping up the sky. They looked exactly the same as half an hour ago, only now they were dead.
So what?
You switched them off, blockhead, and the radio came on. The whole earth just opened up. And what does that mean?
I don't know.
They're jammers.
What?
Jammers. They create interference. They're putting out interference at full power on all frequencies.
But how come?
And jamming all the airwaves. Everything. The whole world. Like in Soviet times.
The whole world?
Stop being so dumb.
Lyoka pleaded feebly from the back seat with a mouth that wouldn't close.
The whole world, brother. All of it. Have you realized at least that the whole world is alive? We just think it's not there. And this is why we think that. But it is there. Have you got that?
Chapter 16. The Final Broadcast.
What do I do with this?
Lyoka asked, struggling to get his bitten tongue round the words.
What sort of question is that?
Artyom looked round at him, as if he was seeing him for the first time. Lyoka was lounging back with his gas mask pulled up onto his forehead. Liquid was flowing out of his mouth, and he was holding an open bottle of home brew. Saveli had given it to him to disinfect his wound.
Give me some too.
Artyom swigged, but it didn't help. Lyoka's crushed teeth grated in Artyom's mouth. He looked at the neck of the bottle. It was completely red. He took another swig.
Let's go,
Saveli plonked down onto his animal pelt.
Where to?
Artyom turned his head towards the stalker.
Hello? Where to? What do you mean, where to?
Back? To Moscow?
Back, back. Are you crazy? Forward. To Ekaterinburg. Home.
Right now?
Right now, friend. Right now. Before those fiends come back.
Artyom thought for a moment. He stuck his head out of the car and spat in the dust.
What about the people?
What people?
Well, in the metro, the people in the metro. What will they do? What's going to happen to them?
What's supposed to happen to them?
Well, they have to be told, they have to find out that we're not alone, that there are jammers, that they can go wherever they like.
That's what I'm talking about, wherever you like. Don't you get it? We have a chance right now. All the roads are open, a full tank of diesel and the canisters back there. We've got a head start. We picked up plenty of guns and cartridges. It's a now-or-never situation.
But those big trucks really will come back, and they'll fix everything. And the jammers will start working again, and everything will be the same way it was. Then what? Won't anyone find out that there's a whole world out there? That they can come up out of the metro?
Those who heard it, okay. They'll figure things out for themselves. Well, are you coming?
But who did hear it? No one's even bothering to listen.
Well, fuck them, then.
You can't say that.
Oh, yes, I can. This is the Sverdlovsk region speaking. How long have I been waiting for that? What metro? What's the metro got to do with anything? This is it, my day. I've got to get moving. This is what I was waiting for, exactly what I was waiting for and preparing for.
Artyom pushed the door with his foot and got out of the car. He threw his head back and looked up at the pylons that were silent now. Lyoka slurped down booze without saying anything. Saveli spun a knob on his radio. A jabbering voice with bird ahs broke out of it.
Paris, damn it, said the stalker. Eh? How do you fancy shooting off to Paris?
I fancy it, said Artyom.
To join the faggots,
Saveli roared with laughter at duping Artyom like that.
What's stopping you?
My stepfather's in the metro. My wife's in the metro. And as well as that, everything I have is in the metro. I can't just not tell them anything, can I? Just go away and leave them there?
The stalker turned the key. The motor started chugging.
Well, it's up to you. I don't have a stepfather in the metro or a stepmother. Apart from whores, I don't have anyone in the metro, and whores aren't likely to just jump up and go dashing off anywhere. The darkness is handier for them.
How do you know that? Whores or not whores?
Artyom's blood was beginning to boil.
No one will stay stuck in the metro of their own free will. People think there's nowhere for them to go. Those red bastards have locked people in the metro and they're keeping them there. They've hidden the whole planet from them. How do you feel about that?
I don't give a shit.
You don't give a shit?
To hell with the whole damn place. I really don't give a shit, believe it. I don't give a shit for the metro, for the people, for whoever is keeping someone else somewhere for some reason. That's no business of mine any longer. I know something else, too. If we hang about here for another 10 minutes, we'll all be dog food. I say stop playing the God Almighty hero, fasten your seatbelt, and let's go.
I can't, Artyom answered in a low voice after a moment's thought. I can't go to damn blasted Paris when everyone I have is in there. And I have to get them out. To tell them. Everyone. They're being tricked. Everything they do, it's all a waste of time. The tunnels, the fighting, the worms, the whole thing, don't you see? It's all for nothing. The living space. The war. The mushroom plague. The famine. 40,000 people. Live people, all of them. Not just my stepfather, not just... all the others, all the people, I have to let them out.
You do as you choose,
Savelli replied. Artyom paused for a moment. He reached his hand out to Leocha and took another swig of crushed teeth.
And you do as you choose, he said.
So what are you going to do?
Artyom's head was splitting. He shrugged.
I'll stay here. I'll try to break them, the pylons.
How can you?
I don't know. Maybe they have grenades or something here.
Uh-huh. Now he wants a grenade. Served up on a plate. Okay, there's no point. If you want to croak, I'm not your comrade.
Artyom nodded.
Hello, up there in the gallery.
Savelli turned to Leocha.
Who are you with?
I'll stay here for now.